Welcome to Ballot Talks on Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. In 2012, 94% of black voters voted to re-elect President Obama. For decades now, most African Americans have supported the Democratic Party and its candidates, but 94% has got to be some kind of a record. Why have African Americans deserted the party of Lincoln? Or to put it another way, why has the GOP not been more enthusiastic in courting black voters? Is the GOP out of step with the aspirations of most African Americans? What is the party doing to appeal to this important group of voters? We'll hear from our guests about the history of African Americans in the GOP, and we'll get their perspectives on the 2016 GOP presidential primary. And joining us by telephone is Leah Wright Rigueur. She's an assistant professor of public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. She focuses on 20th century U.S. political and social history, also modern African American history, and she wrote a book called The Loneliness of the Black Republican, Pragmatic Politics and the Pursuit of Power. And Leah Wright Rigueur, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, thanks for having me today.
You're welcome. And we should be joined very soon by Joe Watkins, who has just arrived in the building here. Leah, let me begin with you and begin with the title of your book, The Loneliness of the Black Republican. I know that's not, you didn't make that title up. It really comes from people like Clarence Thomas. Why did you use that as the title to your book?
Well, I think the first thing is it pretty much captures everything in the last 70 to 80 years. It's a really good assessment of what, you know, what the experience was like for these individuals and continues to be the experience today. But it does come from a 1987 speech to that Clarence Thomas gives at the Heritage Foundation, where he originally says, you know, African Americans have had this really twisted relationship with the Republican Party, and the GOP needs to lay out the welcome mat. And unfortunately, when they do associate with the Republican Party, they turn into a caricature of sorts, forced to make anti-black, anti-ethnic, racial quips over and over again.
Was there a time when the Republican Party had as many black voters as, say, the Democratic Party?
Well, absolutely. I think everybody uses the phrase the party of Lincoln, and that's true. In the immediate aftermath of the Civil War and after the passage of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, and, you know, the introduction of Reconstruction, African Americans in the South are overwhelmingly Republican, and they're overwhelmingly Republican, whether it be through loyalty, through kind of disinterest in just in generalized politics, or because Southern Democrats are incredibly racist. They are that way up until the New Deal, and that's when we start to see major shifts.
And the New Deal, and I guess the Great Society, and some of the other programs that followed that, that's where you see the shift, the change?
Right, and I think a lot of people leave out Truman in that period. I think we can't discount what Truman does in the 1940s for civil rights, and in fact, that's when we see the first shift in terms of the numbers of African Americans who affiliate as Republicans. So a lot of people say, "Oh, look, you know, farewell to the party of Lincoln in 1936 with the New Deal." But African-American partisan affiliation really shifts dramatically in 1948. So after that, we increasingly see kind of more and more African-Americans joining the Democratic Party, even as Southern Democrats continue to exist within the Democratic Party. And then by 1964, it's really cemented where Lyndon Johnson gets 94% of the black vote.
And that's really the Civil Rights Act and some of the other civil rights legislation that gets passed under Johnson.
Correct. And I think one of the big things that comes out of this is, one, you have Lyndon Johnson, who's forcefully pushing the most comprehensive civil rights bill that the nation has ever seen. You have that. But then the Republican Party, which is actually involved in the passage of that civil rights bill, nominates, in kind of this bizarre moment, nominates the one Republican senator who votes against the Civil Rights Act. And so this becomes the figurehead of the Republican Party, Barry Goldwater. And for most African Americans, they say, I can't cast a ballot for a party that says my civil rights are worth nothing.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you, Leah. That's Leah Wright Rigueur. We are talking about African Americans in the Republican Party. And she's the author of a book called The Loneliness of the Black Republican. She's also an assistant professor of public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. And joining us here in our Philadelphia studio is Joe Watkins. He's a political commentator, a regular contributor to MSNBC, also pastor of the Christ Evangelical Lutheran Church here in the Philadelphia area. He served for a time as the Chester Upland School District receiver. He's also chairman of the nonprofit Students First PA and worked in the Bush 1 White House. I believe I have that correct. Joe Watkins, nice to have you with us on
Great
Radio
to be
Times
with you.
As well.
Great to be with you, Marty.
You're a Republican.
I am.
Tell us why you're a Republican.
I'm Republican because of what happened in the 50s and the 60s when the Republicans. I started studying. I went to boarding school. I got a scholarship to boarding school from.
Where'd you go?
I went to Middlesex School in Concord, Massachusetts, and I had grown up in Queens, in New York, and my dad was a school teacher. I went to Middlesex, and then came to Philadelphia to go to Penn, and did my studies at Penn, and then went to seminary at Princeton. And when I finished my studies at Princeton, my wife, of course, the whole time that I was at Penn, then my girlfriend and fiance had been. Encouraging me to consider joining the Republican Party. Her father was a Republican official.
Had you been a Democrat or your
I had been
your
nothing.
Nothing.
My family, I think, was nominally Democrat, as many black families were and are. And it wasn't something that was drilled into us or that we were told we had to be, but everybody was. And I began to think about it a lot when I was in seminary. And I made a decision. I started reading about what the Republican Party had done in the 50s and the 60s, and especially, you know, Bill Noland and the efforts to pass what would have been the first civil rights bill in the late 50s. It was passed, but without any teeth, thanks to an amendment offered by Lyndon Johnson, who ended up being, of course, the one that championed and pushed through civil rights in 64, voting rights in 65, and fair housing in 66, I believe it was. But that's what encouraged me, the strength of the Republicans back in the 50s and 60s who were anti-lynching, who were pro-civil rights, who thought that it was so important to level the playing field. And so that's what, you know, I'm showing my age as well. Because
that's all right. It's a fair thing to do here. But interestingly today, and it's interesting, we're talking a little bit about history, but I also do want to talk about modern day politics. Only 6% of African Americans voted for Mitt Romney, for instance. I mean, what is this disconnect between Republicans, the Republican Party, and potential Republican voters? What's the disconnect?
Well, any good historian could tell you about about Richard Nixon's Southern strategy, which was very successful, and about kind of the shift in who the Republican Party became. And so a lot of the players that were active in the 50s and 60s were replaced by disaffected Democrats from the South who now make up a good part of the Republican Party, which has made it more difficult on issues like voting rights, which I support. And other issues. That being said, the practical side for me of being Republican is that I just think it's also important for people of color to be involved in both parties, both major political parties. That because most of my friends, many of my friends are Democrats, and I've obviously got a lot of friends who are Republicans as well. But the idea is that it's important for people of color, and not all people of color have all of the same issues or interests, but for people of color to be involved in both parties and to be in leadership positions in both parties, because I've always thought that if you aren't there, how can your needs be addressed?
Well, let me go back to you, Leah. And one thing that you also write about in your book, and just marching through some of this history, is that Ronald Reagan, of course, this is more in the 1980s or 1980, launched his campaign in Philadelphia, Mississippi, you know, where the civil rights activists were killed. And it seemed to be kind of a message that he was sending out about states' rights. How did that play among African Americans?
So you would be surprised. It doesn't play out in the way that we expect it to play out or the way that we remember it now. And that's because Reagan does a couple of things. He gives that speech on states' rights, which is an unapologetic states' rights speech in Philadelphia, Mississippi, right, the Deep South. And then he goes to Chicago and meets with the publishers of Ebony Magazine. He meets with Jesse Jackson. And then he goes to the South Bronx and gives a speech to a primarily Latino and black audience where he says, "Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? I didn't think so. And in fact, why don't you think about casting a vote for the Republican Party? And that goes over very, very well with the black press. It goes over extremely well, to the point that it almost overshadows the Philadelphia, Mississippi speech. Mm-hmm. And in fact, a few months later, even as Jesse Jackson comes out and says, I can't endorse Ronald Reagan and I'm going to have to go with Jimmy Carter, Ralph Abernathy of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference endorses Ronald Reagan very publicly.
Showing just how, I guess, fluid all this is. But going back to you, Leah, but today African Americans make up just 2% of registered Republicans nationally. So there is some kind of enduring disconnect here.
Absolutely. And I think, the Pew Center has done some research and found that about between 5 and 11% of African Americans either identify as Republican or lean Republican. But that rarely, if ever, translates into votes for the Republican Party, especially on a national stage. And that's because there's this kind of disconnect between what the Republican Party is saying and then how they are treating African Americans. And for many African Americans, they simply believe that the GOP does not care about them. And so when they do see the GOP discuss racial issues broadly, it tends to be in a hostile or antagonistic manner. So that basically reaffirms this kind of tense relationship that black people in the Republican Party have had for many, many years.
Has that been your experience, Joe?
Yeah, the Republican Party has to do a lot better than it has done. I mean, until people of color and people and everybody else in America sees people of color in leadership positions in the Republican Party. That is, you know, mayors, governors, U.S. senators, U.S. members of the House, state senators and state reps. You really won't see a big change because people are drawn by other people. And so right now there still are frightfully few people of color in leadership positions in the party. You've got one African-American woman who was recently elected to Congress. It's unfortunate that it has taken till 2014 for that to happen, but that's the case. You've got one African American U.S. Senator in Tim Scott in South Carolina.
Right.
Having black Republican U.S. senators has been in the last few decades very few and far between. Ed Brooke being the first memorable in recent memory senator from 66 to 78, and then just a long gap. And still few African American members of Congress. I don't know how many African American Republican mayors, but not too many. And then getting the support that you need to run has always been a challenge.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. In fact, I want to pick up on that, and that's Joe Watkins. He's a political commentator. You've probably seen him on MSNBC. Again, a pastor here in the Philadelphia area, and joining us by telephone, Leah Wright Rigueur, and again, she's at Harvard Kennedy School of Government, and she's also the author of The Loneliness of the Black Republican. To join the conversation, you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Interested in your perspective on this important issue? Also, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Many ways to join the conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Ballot Talks on Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, and today we're looking at the relationship between black voters and the Republican Party. And again, our guests are Leah Wright Rigueur and Joe Watkins. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Joe, as a Republican yourself, I hear you also saying that the party is not doing enough to attract black voters like yourself. Well, what more can the party or should the party do?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with supporting African-American candidates, having people of color who can represent everybody in Congress, in the Senate, in other places. I've got to at least say this much, that the Democratic Party in 2008 supported an African-American to run for the presidency of the United States. I mean, he won, of course, the primaries fair and square, but he was well supported by Democrats. There wasn't an issue with Democrats supporting him to reach that level and to be successful. He was supported in his run for the U.S. Senate and won a Senate seat in Illinois. And when Republicans get to the point where they're willing to support candidates who are thoughtful, smart people, male and female, for top positions, that'll signal a real change. Reince Priebus is a great guy. I know him personally. He's the chair of the Republican National Committee. He's working hard to change things, but it takes time.
Yeah. Well, Michael Steele was the chairman for
and
a
I knew,
while.
I know
well.
Michael as well.
And he worked, as I understand, pretty hard to try to attract more black voters, more black candidates.
Yeah. Of course, all politics are local. So doing it nationally is one thing, but you need the support within the various states.
Leah, is it a matter that the Republican Party hasn't attracted the kind of candidates that can appeal to not just Republicans, but obviously a broad section of voters?
Well, absolutely. I think there was a recent report that came out that said that African Americans will sometimes report a Republican unless he or she is black. And the point that I took away from that piece is not necessarily that they won't support black Republicans, but it has to be the right person. And it has to be somebody who has roots in the community. It has to be someone who has pre-established relationships with African-American voters. And it has to be somebody who's willing to listen and then take that feedback and incorporate it into policies and platforms. So you can't just kind of come in with a stock speech and with a stock agenda that doesn't take into account racial or discriminatory issues and think, yes, these people are going to vote for me on the basis of my race. That's not how it works.
You know, I'm thinking of those conventions. We have one in Philadelphia a year from the summer of 2016. And Leah, when the camera pans all the attendees, all the people who are there for the convention, if it's a Republican convention, it looks like the camera has to look far and wide to find someone who isn't.
They've got to find me.
To find Joe Watkins or to find someone who isn't white.
Absolutely. And I mean, the last Republican National Convention had the same amount of black delegates attending as the 1964 Republican National Convention. Wow. So basically, it hadn't been that low in decades. That's an embarrassment to the Republican Party. I mean, say what you will, you can look at the Democratic National Convention and see faces of all races and ethnicities. You can see a big gender distribution. And so what it's essentially saying, even if it's symbolic, is, hey, we care about you. We represent you. And the Republican Party is really struggling in that area.
Well, and there might be a question, Joe, about the future of the Republican Party if it can't attract a more diverse group of supporters and members.
I've been saying this on national television for a while now, that in order for the party to be successful going forward, especially if the party ever hopes to elect a president, it's got to be a much bigger tent. It's got to be a party that attracts people of color and women, and it's got to attract people from the LGBT community. It's got to attract independents and moderates and Democrats as well. It's got to be a big enough tent that people feel welcome and comfortable and say, you know what, there's something here that I like. And we've got a way to go before we get there.
But does that start at a grassroots level? We're here in Philadelphia, which is, as you know, a largely Democratic town here.
Philadelphia is an old machine town. It's a tough place. I mean, if a Republican wanted to run for mayor here, it'd be hard because of just the numbers. You know, the numbers wouldn't allow for the ratio of Democrats to Republicans. But certainly statewide, there are some opportunities. This is actually a slightly more Democrat state, Pennsylvania is, that is, than it is Republican. But it's possible for Republicans to win under certain circumstances.
Should we think of black Republicans as conservatives? I mean, obviously people have diverse ideas and points of view.
Well, it's a little challenging. You know, it used to be that you could say you were a conservative or you were an evangelical or you were this or that. But really, nowadays, people fit into so many different buckets because you could be an evangelical, but you might be an unemployed evangelical. So you really care much more about jobs and those kinds of issues than you do about perhaps your religious faith when it comes to government. And the same could be said for a whole host of issues. You might have a mildly conservative perspective as it relates to social issues. But then again, if there are people in your family who don't fit those and you still love them, that would cause you to change how you think. And certainly the law is so much different than your religion. I mean, your religion may say one thing, but the law is meant to be blind to our religion and religious beliefs.
Leah, do you see a profile of a black Republican?
So, I mean, here's the interesting thing. About a third of African-American communities, when polled, will say we self-identify as conservative. And in fact, their policy preferences on things that don't have to do with race or aren't overtly about race will line up with Republican Party policy preferences as well. But again, the party has been unable to transfer that conservatism into votes for the GOP. And part of it is because African Americans compartmentalize their conservatism. So they may be conservative at home. They may be conservative at work. They may be conservative in church. But when it comes time to cast a ballot, their loyalty goes back to the Democratic Party, in part because they believe strongly that the Democratic Party has been better for African Americans on racial issues.
Joe, is there any one of the Republican candidates that you feel represents your perspective, your point of view?
I don't know if there's anybody running right now that represents my particular point of view. I think that the candidates that are running have to they are mindful of the fact that they've got to win Republican primaries in states like Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina, and that the people that show up to vote in those primaries are probably a little bit more conservative than the average Republican voter. So much of what you hear them say is probably for the sake of those voters and to keep their standing in the polls high. But so I don't see that there's anybody out there that's saying anything that I would particularly say. But then again, I'm not a candidate for the presidency, at least not right now.
You're not number 18 or
that's
whatever,
right, I'm not number 18.
Whatever it would be. I do want to play a little clip from Dr. Ben Carson, of course, a renowned neurosurgeon. He's running for president as a member of the Republican Party. In fact, is one or two behind Donald Trump, who, of course, is a leader. This is an interview that he did with Fox News' Megyn Kelly discussing an op-ed that he had written for USA Today. It actually was about Black Lives Matter, but here he is talking a bit about his Republicanism.
Well, you know, I've had many Black Democrats come up to me recently and say, "You make so much sense. I'm a Democrat, but I'm voting for you." I get that all the time, and I know that's exactly what the progressives are afraid of and don't want to hear. But at some point, people are going to start thinking about their own interests. And myself and a number of my Republican colleagues are very interested in putting together mechanisms that allow people to climb out of dependency and to become strong parts of the fabric of America. That's what we're working on. It doesn't do any good to pat people on the head and give them all the little things that they need so that they're satisfied in a state of dependency. That's exactly what we don't need. That's killing us. And I think people are waking up to that.
Leah, that word dependency, he says it several times. Is that a code word?
It's absolutely a code word. And we've talked about this, you know, or we've seen it crop up over and over and again. And I want to make an important distinction, because I think in Black communities, you will hear people talk about dependency, the state, you know, getting off welfare rolls and things like that. But that tends to be within Black communities, private conversations, versus having that conversation in a very public arena with Republicans, where traditionally dependency has indicated, you know, welfare moms, Black poor, crime, and kind of other coded words that, frankly, a lot of voters find insulting.
Mm. What about for you, Joe?
Well, I have an unusual position because I'm a Republican. I've worked for a U.S. senator, a Republican U.S. senator for a Republican president, and I also pastor a church that's in one of the poorer neighborhoods in Philadelphia, and I've been doing that for 17 years, happily so. And I know that as much as I believe that it's important to help people get on their feet and so they can take care of themselves, I also know that there's some people that you're just going to have to take care of. And you can't leave people out in the cold. You've got to have a safety net for people who can't help themselves. You got to love them. You've got to encourage them, even if they're never going to get any better. And there's got to be room in a party platform for that, too. So it can't be all and none of the other. It's got to be a little bit of both.
Do you think the Republican Party is heartless on this issue or a little bit heartless on this issue?
There have been Republicans who have talked about it in the past. I mean, Jack Kemp called himself a bleeding heart conservative, and mm-hmm. he was somebody who really cared. There are Republicans who care about it. But I think that there are a few Republicans that have the capacity to talk about it, at least from my kind of perspective, having worked in the inner city for the last 17 years and working with people who are addicted to crack cocaine and who are on welfare and who aren't, and they would love to do better. they can't wait to do better than they're doing in many instances. And it's very, very hard to help people get back on their feet. But you've got to love them the whole time, and they do need assistance. And you got to make sure that assistance is there for them.
And that's Joe Watkins, our guest here in Philadelphia, political commentator, regular commentator for MSNBC. His church that he just mentioned is Christ Evangelical Lutheran Church in Philadelphia. And as he mentioned, has worked for a number of Republicans, including in the first Bush White House. Joining us by telephone, Leah Wright Rieger, again, assistant professor of public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. And she focuses on the 20th century U.S. and social history, also modern African-American history. And if that weren't enough, she wrote a book called The Loneliness of the Black Republican, Pragmatic Politics and the Pursuit of Power. It's Ballot Talks on Radio Times, and we are talking about politics. And in this hour, looking at this relationship between African Americans and the Republican Party. I do want to get some callers into the conversation, but Leah, how do you see the candidacy of Dr. Ben Carson?
So, you know, on the one hand, it's remarkable to have an African American running as a front runner in the Republican Party right now. Right, he's one of the top three contenders, and is polling very well amongst the base. On the other hand, part of what's going on is that he's getting in rhetorical trouble because all of the things that he's saying are not really resounding with people outside of the Republican base. Mm. And so I think he's representative of a strain of conservatism that is both at home within black communities, that kind of 30% I mentioned before, one-third, but then also very much reviled when it goes public or when it becomes part of the public conversation.
Well, and he has called the president a liar. He's called the president a
right.
psychopath. He said that Obamacare is like slavery. I mean, it's interesting because he's such a soft-spoken man. But when you hear him sometimes, what he says is so, frankly, Joe, incendiary.
Well, many candidates feel that in order to break out of the pack, especially when you have such a large number of people running, they've got to say things to draw attention to themselves. And Dr. Carson's been very successful at that. He's done very well so far. It gets tougher as time goes on. You've got to actually win those primaries. And then if you happen to win the primaries and become the nominee, then you have to win independents and moderates and non-Republicans, people who aren't inclined to vote with the party, to your side. And then you have to answer for anything that you may have said during the early part of the campaign that may not square with what you're saying now. So that becomes a challenge for candidates.
Let me see what Marilyn from looks like Chestnut Hill has to say. Hi, Marilyn. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. My concern has been the difference in attitude between what I see as Republicans and Democrats towards people in the minority. And it could either be a minority race or it could be somebody in a minority experience, like having a huge hospital bill or a special needs child or struggling to stay at work with a whole lot of family problems or being black in a poor community. It feels to me like the difference between empathy and saying, I did it, you should be able to. And I think Joe actually has expressed several of my thoughts, and certainly Dr. Carson is the perfect example of it. You know, he's been successful, and his position is, I pulled myself up. I struggled through all of this. You should be able to. But the data shows that there are a lot of reasons why people struggle and fail. And if you look at our black communities, many of them are in tough situations. And the two black Republicans that I've known felt that they fought their way up, and they didn't want to. That's what they were trying to encourage. But the question is, why can't Republicans be more empathetic towards the situations faced by people, whether it's a huge hospital bill that pushes you towards bankruptcy or a poor community, the kind of poor community Joe is working with now.
Well, Marilyn, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. In fact, I'm going to toss it back to you, Joe.
No, that's a great point. I think that that's why it's important for Republicans to have people of color in key positions to be able to make the party a little bit more sensitive to bring these kinds of challenges to the forefront, because how else would you know unless you had worked closely with communities that are struggling? And how else would you know how to formulate legislation that's sensitive to the fact that it's hard? I've got to tell you, as a pastor, every single Sunday I've got people coming to me asking for help, and I don't really have anywhere to send them. I mean, from a government standpoint, there's nowhere to send them. I mean, whatever safety net we used to have as a country doesn't really very much exist anymore. And there are so many people now slipping through the cracks that they're coming in droves to places like the church that I serve to ask for help. I mean, just for food, to get by the next week, for whatever money they can get, to pay bills, to keep their cell phone on, to be able to get downtown for a hospital appointment or doctor's appointment, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no safety net really to speak of. And so it's very, very hard. If you're somebody who wants to do better and you've been addicted or you've been to prison and now you're out and you're trying to be a good citizen, it's very, very hard to get back on your feet.
About a minute before our second break here, Leah, we actually did a show on this about a number of conservatives who were looking at prison, for instance, and the numbers of people who have been incarcerated. And then you get out and you've got this kind of monkey on your back because you've spent some time in prison. There seems to be, and it's an interesting coalition between Republicans and Democrats, or even liberals and conservatives, addressing this issue. We're almost up in a break here, but do you see this as a sign of perhaps moving forward?
It's absolutely a sign of progress. I mean, it's a fragile coalition, but it's a coalition that still exists. And I think among some Republicans, they do see the need for structural solutions to these massive problems facing the United States. It reminds me very much of the 60s and 70s, where really there was a lot of bipartisan work on policy solutions to the major problems facing citizens in this country and non-citizens.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. It's Ballot Talks on Radio Times. And today we're looking at the sometimes fraught but always interesting relationship between black voters and the Republican Party. The voice you just heard is Leah Wright Rigger. Also with us is Joe Watkins. And you can join the conversation. Call us, as Marilyn did, that phone number 1-888-477-9499. A lot of comments here as well. RadioTimes@WHYY.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne talking with Leah Wright Rigger. She's a professor, an assistant professor of public policy at Harvard Kennedy School of Government, has written a book called The Loneliness of the Black Republican. Joe Watkins here in our Philadelphia studio, regular contributor to MSNBC, pastor of the Christ Evangelical Lutheran Church.
And one of the lonely black Republicans.
And one of the lonely black Republicans that our guest, Leah writes about. Exactly. And if you're a lonely black Republican, you can join us as well. That phone number 1-888-477-9499. In fact, we have Walter from West Philadelphia joining us. Hi, Walter. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I guess you can add me to the list of the lonely.
Lonely black Republican. Okay.
And being a Philadelphia Republican, it's even a far more lonely existence. But I think that the party really, instead of looking from the top, really needs to work at from the bottom level. Personally, I've been in the party, since, I guess, over 20-some years. I have worked as a poll worker. I've been a committee person, and I think if you look around, the opportunities are far more there than in the Democratic machine system, where literally until someone dies or goes to jail, you're not going to have any opportunities. Well, I think if we did more to, more of a registration effort, I think if you put out more back that there, you can start and become a committee person. You can
become a
poll worker and start, you know, getting people to run for city council or some of these rural offices and start making a difference at that end, you know, rather than focusing on the presidency or on the Senate races. That's where you have to, you know, build up the base. And as far as,
Walter, only because we had a lot of people that want to join the conversation, you raise an important point, which I'm going to throw to Joe only because we're here in Philadelphia, and this used to be a Republican town. Now it's largely a Democratic town.
Right.
And it's not like there isn't a Republican Party, but is there a place for African Americans in that party?
Well, there's a lot of rebuilding that needs to be done. I think Walter has stated it very clearly. And encouraging people of color to be involved is part of the challenge. You've got to, of course, what the party is saying locally as well as on a state basis has to be attractive enough for people of color to say, well, you know what, I'm going to leave where I am and join that. And articulating where Republicans stand locally and on the state level hasn't really happened yet. We haven't really seen any clear articulation of where Republicans stand on a whole host of issues, nor have we seen people of color supported monetarily, that is, to run for significant office so that people of color could say, you know, I like this candidate, I like this man or this woman, and this is somebody that I can identify with. And if they're running as a Republican, then I'm a Republican, I'm voting with them.
You know, this might be a stretch, Leah, but I was thinking about the issue of immigration, which, of course, has gotten so much attention. And, you know, we've got Donald Trump talking about the wall and making, frankly, you know, insulting and incendiary comments about Mexicans coming to the country illegally. But I wonder how that plays among African-American voters and whether immigration has become a stand-in for some racial issues.
So I think, you know, this is the tough thing, right? Most black voters, if you poll them on their policy preferences, support a pathway to citizenship, right? And I think this is especially true if we go broader than African Americans and think about black Americans, many of whom are first, second, you know, third generation, so are coming from immigrant families as well. And so I think that kind of language doesn't really go over well. It feels hostile. It feels antagonistic. It feels controversial. Instead, I think some of the things that go over really well are conversations about jobs and employment, right? Because even as our unemployment numbers have dropped in this country, African Americans are still disproportionately unemployed and underemployed. So those are the kinds of things that, you know, I think party officials really need to think about when they're trying to target black communities.
A Facebook comment from Ben who says it's not rocket science. It's not the color of the candidate. Until Republicans start supporting policies that help and speak to black people, they're not going to get the black vote.
That's right. That's right.
Yes.
You've got to have policies that speak to the needs of people of color. And once you do that, you'll start to get the attention of people of color. And then you've got to have some people to articulate that as well. It can't be you've got to see people that look like you. It really helps. I mean, why did you have in some precincts in 2008 100% turnout when President Obama ran? Well, because people could look at him and say, you know what? He looks like me, and I'm so proud that he's running. And so in my precinct, everybody's going to show up, and I'm going to get everybody to show up. And people could understand that because they could relate to him. Republicans don't really have that. We don't have yet people of color. If Colin Powell had been a national candidate,
yes,
that might have been very different. But we've not yet had folks like that who have been elected or had high office appointed or other to relate to.
Leah, you said yes, affirmatively
yes.
After Colin Powell.
So Colin Powell is one of those Republicans who is universally kind of revered amongst all racial groups. And in fact, if you look at his kind of popularity numbers, they only grow and grow and grow. And they are especially high amongst African-American communities. And I think part of the reason why is that he's viewed as a figure, one, his military background. He's also seen as a respected figure across a number of different circles. And then he has a willingness to go against his party. So giving a speech and saying that affirmative action is necessary, or giving another speech and saying there should be room in our party for people who are pro-choice and pro-life, right? That shouldn't rule anybody out. And I think he really embodies this idea of big tent thinking within the GOP, and that's something that a lot of people could get behind.
But does it exist today? I mean, there's a lot of talk about big tents, Joe, but just how inclusive a tent is the Republican Party today?
Well, it's got to do better. Otherwise, there's going to be a big loss in 2016. I mean, if the tent remains small and the Republican...
And white.
That's correct. If the party doesn't grow and doesn't attract other people, it's going to be very hard to win in 2016. So it has to grow. It has to do better. It has to begin to listen to people of reason. It's got to be able to relate to people of color. You've got people like me who've said the same thing Colin Powell is saying about affirmative action. And people, the party has to listen to that.
We're talking about the party. The party is made up of many people, some of which have power, some are the, you know, the sort of grassroots part of that party. How do you break through that, though?
Well, bit by bit and very slowly. I've been at this for a long time, of course. I mean, I actually ran for office. I ran for U.S. Congress in 1984. I was the Republican nominee for a House seat.
Oh, you're 12 years old?
Oh, aren't you nice? Aren't you nice? Aren't you nice? And I was well supported, actually. I actually 2 weeks from the election in a primarily Democratic district, the race was even, was dead even. I ended up losing. But the race was dead even, and I was supported. I had the support at the time of a majority of the black community, as well as the base Republican support that I was drawing on, which made me a strong candidate. But it's got to start in local communities all across the country.
Let me see what looks like Chris from Wayne has to say. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're on Ballot Talks on Radio Times.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Here is my question. Let me make a comment. Let me preface it with a comment before my question. I tend to think that most of the blacks who join the Republican Party are of a higher social economic status than their peers. Now, having said that, I wonder whether blacks not being a part of the Republican Party is a function of race or whether it's a function of social economic status. That's my question.
It's a good one, Chris. I appreciate the call. Leah, let me toss that to you first.
So here's the interesting thing, that there's the person who is most likely to be a black Republican is a young, roughly college age or a little past college age black man from the South, right? So somebody from Morehouse College, for example, or, you know, is more likely to be a black Republican at this point in time. And in fact, what you see, I think, too, is that the more education and the more wealth that African Americans build, the more likely they are to be liberal Democrats. This changes, though, at the top kind of 1%, where, yes, they are, you know, more likely to be Republican. So the super wealthy of African Americans, I think, for fiscal concerns. And that's true in times where our country's not in racial crisis. But then when we do see our country in racial crisis or we have a major racial or racialized event, African Americans, including black Republicans, tend to go back to the Democratic Party.
Interesting. We have an email from Louise who says, what policies has the Republican Party supported that benefit the African American community? Can I toss that to you, Joe?
Well, I don't know that there's any. I mean, it's hard to say that the Republican Party moves as one giant organism. Obviously, you've got different branches of the party. My oldest daughter works for Charlie Baker, who is the new Republican governor of Massachusetts, and she runs his D.C. office. And Charlie Baker is a Republican who's not very partisan. He's very practical, very smart, and he's got he relates well in that blue state to Democrats as well as Republicans. And so he was elected, I think, fairly handily and has, as I understand it, Democrats in his administration as well as Republicans. That really is a model for the future. Republicans, because there's a dearth of Republicans in the northeastern part of the country. There's a dearth of Republicans in the West. I mean, you can kind of see if you look at the electoral college map, you know, where Republicans are strong and where Republicans don't exist. And so that map has to begin to change. And that's why I said it's local. It's local. It's locally based. It's not, you know, national party policies. Mm-hmm. It's the policies and the movements of local elected officials who happen to be Republican who are able to change the dynamic and the discussion.
It sounds like, Leah, what you both are saying is that it will, if it's going to happen, it will take time for the Republicans to welcome or be appealing to more African Americans.
Yes. So it'll take time. It takes a lot of money or investment, at least. And I think it also takes a willingness of party leaders, so not just local leaders, but big-name Republicans speaking out against extremists and kind of fringe people within their party. And I like to tell people that the Republican Party is always going to be judged by its worst element when it comes to racial and ethnic minorities. Uh-huh. So if a person over there says something extremely racist, extremely bigoted, really problematic, that's how people are going to view, right, the entire party, unless someone comes out and very forcefully denounces that and says, we will not be associated with that, and that is not the Republican Party of today.
Well, that's why there's a need to have people in place who represent really kind of the breadth of understanding on issues. For instance, the Democratic Party had Senator Robert Byrd as a majority leader for years. He was a former Klansman, but he was not the face of the Democratic Party. When you think Democrat, you didn't think, you know, Robert Byrd, ex-Klansman, you know, because this is the same party that was able to nominate Barack Obama for the presidency and elect him to the presidency. And so Republicans have to do better. It becomes the faces of the party that really matter.
We have a tweet from Senator Hughes of Pennsylvania. This is to you, Joe.
Fitzy Hughes is a good man.
Yeah. And he's saying, it's the policy and the person. My friend, Reverend Joe, must admit that his party destroyed the safety net his congregation now needs.
Yeah,
do you agree
with
Senator Hughes?
He is right that there are, back in the 1980s, nationally, the safety net was pretty well worn away. And now is pretty much non-existent for poor people in inner cities. We've got to work to fix that. It's not enough to blame anybody, of course, because there's plenty of blame. But we've got to actually work on fixing that.
Let me toss something else out here, Leah. And this actually was a big issue in Pennsylvania not so long ago, having to do with voter ID. But it seemed that the efforts in this state and other states to make sure that people had voter ID was to deal with this thing called voter impersonation, which apparently hardly ever exists. But nonetheless, it seemed to be aimed at poor and minority voters. Has this hurt the Republican Party?
Absolutely. And I just want to add, it also disproportionately affects college students, too, and kind of some other populations. And so I just want to say that without policy to, you know, changes or shifts or even changing the conversation, these are hollow sentiments. And in fact, you know, young people, poor people, racial minorities, ethnic minorities, college students see this when they go to the ballots. And I think, too, one of the interesting things that came out after kind of all of these voter ID laws and things like that was that amongst racial minorities, they were so angry about the new laws in effect, they came out in even higher numbers.
Sorry.
And they said,
right,
we're going to stand here, we're going to wait, and we are going to cast our ballots. And so I think there's
anger is what drives people to vote. You're absolutely right.
Right. I mean, exactly. And so the Republican Party needs to think about that. So rather than trying to keep the vote down or disenfranchise certain kind of certain segments of the population, they really do need to think about, how can we build alliances with these people? Maybe we should be encouraging them to vote with the hopes that they will vote Republican.
Final words to you, 30 seconds, Joe Watkins.
Well, I'm committed to being a part of the change, and I've been in this party for a little while now, and I'm just committed to making it better. I want to bring the depth and breadth of my experience, not only politically, but working with people in the inner city, to the forefront, so that we can fashion policies that work for everybody and provide opportunity for people to get on their feet, but also make sure that the poorest people aren't left behind.
Well, it's been an important conversation, an interesting conversation. My thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Joe Watkins, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And he's a political commentator. You can see him on MSNBC, also pastor of the Christ Evangelical Lutheran Church here in Philadelphia. Leah Wright-Rigger, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. She's an assistant professor of public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Also wrote a book called The Loneliness of a Black Republican, Pragmatic Politics and the Pursuit of Power. Both guests joining us on Ballot Talks on Radio Times, a show we do on Thursday, focusing on a specific issue related to election politics. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times and you can find out much more about the program, including how to download a podcast of the show. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.